Today, I'm going to show you some slides, and the key word, because you notice I always have a key word for us to think with, is, as you see in number one on your handout, psyche, which gives us the English borrowing, psyche, psychological, psychiatric, etc. But notice what it means in the medium that we're reading right now. It means essence of life while one is alive, semicolon, conveyor of identity while one is dead. Another word that comes in very prominently today is the word we saw the last time we met, which I give you in 1A. Sema, meaning sign, signal, symbol, and this time I underlined that other interesting meaning, tomb, or tomb of a hero. And then the verb that's derived from sema, semaino, actually means indicate or use a sema. And this verb is what gives us the English word semantic, having to do with the study of meaning. The object that I'm going to be studying, because Greek painting survives primarily as painting on top of objects, the object that I'm going to be talking about is given to you in number two of the handout, a hydra, and please never spell it as the poisonous serpent, hydra. And this is, as I tell you, a vessel used for libations. Libations are ritual pourings on occasions that include the worship of ancestors and the worship of heroes. And we'll have two big cases in point, two big examples. Number three, the Münster Hydria, and number four, the Boston Hydria. And we're going to start with the Münster Hydria, and as I say in number five, the picture you're going to see has to do with an athletic event, and you already see this picture on your screen. Number six on your handout, the picture mixes the ritual of an athlete's ordeal, and we've already seen that in ancient Greece, athletics are ritual. So mixes the ritual with the myth of a hero's ordeal. Number seven, on this picture, you see an athlete engaging in a chariot contest. And this is not clear now, but it will become later. The athlete is none other than Achilles himself, the hero of our Iliad, the number one hero of our Iliad. And you know what Achilles is doing? He is honoring his nearest and dearest friend, Patroclus. Now, that's kind of hard to see from this picture, but that's our task, to start trying to read this picture. Number eight, keep this in mind as I start showing you lots of pictures. This picture shows ritual and myth together, just as the poetry of the Iliad in scroll 23 shows ritual and myth together in the chariot race. That's the climactic moment, as described in Iliad book, or scroll 23, which I discussed with you the last time. Okay, now look at me for a while. Don't look at the quotation yet from Emily Vermeule. I'll get to it in a minute. A quick bird's eye view about what this medium is. I call it black figure painting. Art historians use this term because what you have, essentially, is a background of red and a foreground of black. That the human figures that you see painted are primarily black in their pigmentation. There's another kind of painting technique that comes right on the heels of black figure painting called red figure. And sure enough, in red figure, you have the foreground of red and the background of black. So just the flip side of what we see in black figure painting, where you have a foreground of black and a background of red. And all this is happening in the late 500s, early 400s, as far as we're concerned for this course. So most of the pictures you're going to see are from the 6th and 5th centuries before our era. Now, I said figures in the foreground, and how in black figure painting, they're primarily black. That's because I haven't talked about gender yet. If you're going to specify that the figure is female, not male, then the skin of the character will be painted white. So in black figure painting, male's skin is colored black, female's skin is colored white, and the background is red. And I love this because it kind of helps us illustrate how race can be a cultural construct. Think of the fact that in this culture, black color and white color are used not for designating race, whatever that is, but designating gender. So be on the lookout for people with black skin and people with white skin, because that's the way you can tell the distinction between explicitly male and explicitly female characters. Then in some paintings, you don't bother to make the distinction. Something else that I want you to be on the lookout for as we look at these pictures is, remember how I talked to you last time about, how shall I call it, video versus audio dimensions of narrative? Well, we're all used to the audio because that's what we're reading. And what was the word for a coded message in the dimension of audio? Remember from last time? It was ainos. And what was the word for a coded message on the level of video? That's what we're reviewing again this time, sema. That sema is not only a sign, signal, symbol, alternatively a tomb of a hero, it's also, can I put it this way, a video dimension of telling a story, of giving a narrative. So essentially, what you're seeing here is, from the point of view of a 6th century ancient Greek, a sema. It's a picture. And because this has to do with both myth and ritual dealing with a hero, what I'm hoping to show you is that if we understand how to read this sema, again, as we've seen before, in other exercises of understanding compressed narrative, we will have a window, as it were, on understanding all the major issues of the Iliad and everything that is at stake in the Iliad. That's my claim. I think that's how important this picture is, and that's how important the artist who executed this picture thought it was. So it bears a lot of concentration. You notice I'm using the word concentration. You'll see why in a minute. And it's an exercise for you in reading, yet again, a compressed message that is encoded so that only those who are intellectually, morally, and emotionally qualified can get it. And you remember those three qualifications from the last time. Just as you need those qualifications as an initiate to get it on the level of audio, so too on the level of video. With those things in mind, I've got to give you this wonderful quotation from a colleague of mine who's talking about windows. And by windows, we mean perspectives. And imagine in this picture that what you have is a window like this. And then beyond that window, you just have, shall we say, a walled-off space. And you're looking through the window, okay? And what Emily Vermeule, one of the great archaeologists in the Grand Harvard tradition of the study of archaeology, once wrote, number 9, about the window effect of the picture frame, not in this picture, but in a picture we're going to see in a minute, but it applies to this picture as well, quote, "The technique gives the impression that the myth is circling around in another world, outside the window frame through which the spectator views it, in endless motion, which is somehow always arrested at the same place whenever we return to the window. You see, what I'm trying to get you to do is, this is yet another exercise in reading up compression, very similar to the exercise you are engaged in section, where you have to read that compressed picture on the Shield of Achilles, and where you zoom in on that picture of litigation where the plaintiff refuses ever to accept any compensation for the death of somebody, and where the defendant forever offers that compensation. That freeze motion picture of the Shield of Achilles helps us think now of the freeze motion picture as we look through this window. But then your fearless teacher is asking you the question in number 10, are you looking in from the outside or are you looking out from the inside? And this is the kind of question that I think we will be able to ask not only in this painting, which is framed by a window, but even every time you go to a film or you see television where you see a frame and you're looking in. Who's on the inside? Who's on the outside? Now, did you notice that my colleague talks about circling around something? Trouble is, we don't see what the circling is around. Why? Because I'm showing you a black and white picture, which means that in this black and white picture, you can't tell the white from the red. Too bad. Because there is white. There's painted white in this picture. Shall I show you where the white area is with my trusty laser? Like that. You can just see barely traces of the space between what's white here and what's red here. All this background is red here, but let me trace it again. This is white. Interesting, no? What's the shape look like? I don't know. Do you know that line of women's stockings called L apostrophe eggs, legs? I once had a birthday party, and my friends put one of those things right on top of the cake. And there was a warrior driving a chariot around the legs. I don't know, I thought it was great. Gave me endless joy. Okay, now listen, you're all initiated. You have all had the reading ordeal of going through the Iliad, and I mean ordeal in a heroic sense, which is a good sense. Let's see if you're a sharp reader. When Nestor gives the instructions on how to be a successful chariot driver and how you must do everything exactly the right time in the right place when you get to the turning point, remember what the turning point is, the stadema. What do you have to do? You have to slow down the left-hand force and speed up the right-hand force. That means what? Are you going clockwise or counterclockwise around the turning post? Counterclockwise, okay? And notice here that the horses are going counterclockwise around the turning post, okay? And what fascinates me is look how the right-hand horses have their heads further ahead, and the left-hand horses have their heads further back. Isn't that interesting? So this is that moment when you're making the turn, except in this piece of Greek art, the concentration, I'm using the word concentration again, the concentration is on making the turn. So instead of thinking of a parabola where you're going like this, because this is a drinking cup, excuse me, a pouring cup, and it's round, in a sense, the trajectory of the chariot race concentrates only on the turn, and it's like you're turning and turning and turning left forever as you're going around and around and around. Now, eat your hearts out. Where is Achilles? I'm afraid Achilles' head is gone. It's chipped off. If we saw his head, it would be here. But look, at least we have his chest. At least we have his shield. We have this leg. So that's something. And unfortunately, the charioteer who is here, who's driving the chariot, is also gone. Only the wheel of the chariot is visible. Again, I'm very frustrated. Look at the hilt of his sword. Now, the question is, what is Achilles doing? Now, you have to take it as an article of faith at this point that this is Achilles. I haven't proved it yet, but I think by the time we're finished, you will believe that this is Achilles. But for the sake of an argument, what is Achilles doing next to the chariot? He's running. And that means the chariot is being driven at breakneck speed, is going around the Sema. Going around the turning post, the white egg-shaped mass, whatever. I haven't given it a name yet. And Achilles is running alongside. You see, it turns out that the Athenians had a major festival. This was one of the most prestigious festivals of the Greek-speaking world. It was held, you guessed it, on a seasonally recurring basis. Its ideology was that it compensates for the death of heroes, because that's what athletics are about. And at this seasonally recurring athletic festival, one of the main athletic events was a special Athenian athletic tradition, which was where the athlete is in a chariot race, and he's riding in the chariot, but at key moments in the race, the athlete has to jump off and start running like crazy alongside the chariot, wearing a warrior's armor. That means wearing the breastplate, wearing the shin guards, wearing the helmet, wearing the shield, the whole works. Can you imagine this? And you're running alongside the chariot, and then at a crucial point where the chariot spins around and comes back behind you, you're supposed to jump back on as the chariot is going full speed. You can imagine that driving a chariot is already an ultimate test in terms of Greek athletics, of muscular and nervous and just mental coordination. But imagine having to coordinate with your chariot driver as the warrior riding on the chariot and then jumping off and then jumping back on again at a key point. Amazing. And if you're an athlete in the 6th century, you'd be doing this as an athlete, but remember, athletics is religious, and you're doing it to make up for the prototypical death of a hero. But here, it's Achilles himself who's doing it, making up for the prototypical death of whom? Just as we saw in the chariot race of Iliad, Scroll 23, making up for the death of Patroclus, a death that he cannot ever make up for fully. It's no matter how much you exert yourself, you'll never make up for it. That's why athletics requires seasonally recurring agony on the part of new generations of athletes, season after season, year after year, forever. That's the magnitude of the death of a hero. That's what is at stake. I'd give anything to see Achilles. I can't. However, there is a miniature size replica of Achilles hovering above the white egg-shaped mass. So if you want to imagine what Achilles looked like, that's what he would look like. Except he's not, can I put it this way, life-size. This warrior is life-size. This is miniature. Can I give it the art historian's favorite word for this? Homunculus, meaning in Latin, little man. So he's the homunculus. And I don't want to name him yet. You can start guessing who it is. But there it is. And it seems to be hovering over the white egg-shaped mass. Okay, I can't stand it anymore. I already blurted it out. If you were a 5th or a 6th century Greek, what would you call the white egg-shaped mass? You'd call it a Sema. And there it is, hitting you right between the eyes. But Sema in what sense? A picture in that generic sense of sign, signal, symbol? Tomb of a hero? How about turning post for a chariot race? Answer, all of the above. Fused meaning, all at the same time. So it's a picture, a symbol, it's the tomb of a hero, and it's the turning post of a chariot race. And in fact, if you start looking at the archaeology of the Olympics and the other great seasonal athletic festivals, it turns out that the turning post was regularly a place where the corpse of a hero was located. And people were so aware of the presence of the hero that the crucial point, the climax of athletic skill and endurance in a chariot race, had to do with making a turn around what was literally a tomb of a hero. So the turning post in the classical period and before was the tomb of a hero. Not only that, but the restless soul of a hero. Can I put it that way? Or I can put it another way, say psyche of a hero. The restless, disembodied conveyor of identity after death. And the spirit of the hero in ancient Greek superstition was always ready to spook the horses at this crucial moment, which is where most of the crashes happen in ancient Greek chariot racing, the therma, the turning point. And there'd be such taboo names as paraxippos, meaning he who spooks the horses, because there was such a dread about crashing at the turn, at the turning post. And so, in that light, doesn't this homunculus, who's hovering above the thema, become all the more interesting? You could see I could go on forever, but I have 2 dozen more pictures to show you. Some of them I'll linger over, expansion. Others I will compress like crazy. That's our medium. This is what you see upstairs. If you go back, you see this part here? This is the scene we're going to look at. Ooh, looks like gods. This is Zeus, the old thunderer. That is his thunderbolt. This is Hermes, the god who mediates between all the opposites of the universe, between life and death, between consciousness and unconsciousness, between wakefulness and sleep. You name the opposition, Hermes mediates it. What's the symbol for Hermes' ability to go back and forth between all the oppositions of the universe? His magic wand, which is still the symbol for physicians and pre-meds out there. What's the name for Hermes' magic wand? Caduceus, right. And don't worry about the spelling. It'll be in your lecture notes, but look at this picture for the moment. Okay, who's this? Look at this color of her skin. Whoops. Her. All right. So it's a she, and she's wearing an armor on her chest. There's snakes coming out of the armor. She has a shield. She has a spear. Who is she? Athena, the goddess of Athens and the goddess of war science, as opposed to martial fury, who would be Ares. Okay. Who is this? This is Dionysus, the god who brings people back to life. Please don't think of him only as the god of wine. That's being very eye, ear, nose, throat specialist. You shouldn't think of him that way only. I'll explain that later. And there he is with the symbols of Dionysus, the ivy. And who is this? Well, all I can say is that she's making a gesture, and I'll illustrate the gesture. Like this. Okay? And why don't we just say, I don't know, for the moment. In this picture, you can see the white egg-shaped mass a little bit more clearly. You can see, I hope, that the color coding, where the white stands out in the middle and is the focus of attention. May I put it this way? The point of concentration. Think of what concentration means in English. The point of concentration. I think you can see a little bit clearly the delineation, especially here, between the white below and the red above. By the way, you see these letters? They're going to identify who the homunculus is, so I can hardly wait. But we'll need a close-up for that. And just one thing before we leave this picture, what's this? Seems to be somebody who's standing right in the way of the chariot. What's going on? What's the gender? Well, you can tell. You see there's a hand there. That's all we have left. Because you have a big chip off here, but see that? It's a gesture like this. And it's a white hand, so it's a female figure standing right in the path of the chariot, of the onrushing chariot. You can tell I really enjoy reading, whether it's film, whether it's an ancient Greek thema, whether it's a picture that is within the audio of the Iliad, whatever it is, or whether it's the audio of the Iliad itself, or for us, the printed page. A close-up of the lion that guards the thema. And lions were thought of as the, how shall I say it, I'll use the word symbol of the dead hero in his restless, furious self, where he's still raging. Even though he's dead, he still has that martial rage that he died with. There he is, guarding the thema. A close-up of Achilles. You still have to take my word for it that it's Achilles. You see his breastplate, you see the hilt of his sword, you see his shield, you see his leg. A close-up of the horses, and you see the left-hand horse's head being pulled back. The right-hand horses, because they're being whipped, have their heads forward as they're making their left turn. And you see the hand of the lady. There are the letters. So in this era of Greek civilization, there's this mentality that it's not enough to give you a picture. There has to be letters, which for them is audio, because if you read the letters, it becomes audio, right? So first letter is PH, second letter is S, third letter is U, fourth letter is KH. I know I have that's two letters in English, but it's one letter for them. And the fifth letter is E. So spell it out, 2K. How did we define it at the beginning of the lecture? This was our key word, disembodied conveyor of life after death. Now, here's my big question for you, readers, initiated readers that you are. Whose 2K is it? Is it Achilles's? Remember Achilles says in book 9, I have just one 2K to lose, damn it. Because when you're alive, it's your breath of life. Once it leaves you, then there's your corpse, right? And there's the disembodied conveyor of identity after death. So once your life disintegrates, psyche is lost from you, and there you are, you just have your corpse. That's why Achilles wants to hang on to this psyche. Is it his psyche? I love this one because you can really see the white underneath. That's white. And then here's the red background. And then here's the black foreground. Okay, ready? I deliberately withheld the color because I want you to appreciate the mental impact of that egg-shaped white mass that is hitting you between the eyes. It makes your cognition, it makes your concentration focus on the tomb of the hero, on the death of the hero, on how that death can never be made up for, no matter how many times you do athletics. The only way athletics will make up for that death is if you do it on a seasonally recurring basis forever and ever. Another angle. I love this. There's the gods again. I'm still unsure about who the lady is. Oh, I'm so frustrating. Damn it. Okay, now I'm going to give you some really compressed pictures. I have to go bang, bang, bang very fast so I can get through this. But what I want you to look out for is, are you ready? The principle of variation, which is basic for this kind of medium. In other words, you might see different ingredients in different places, but the overall message will still be very much the same. When you saw the movie by Kieślowski last Tuesday, did you know that that director wanted to make 27 different versions of Double Life of Veronique? And what we saw was the American version, there's another French version, there's a Polish version. So the thing is, watch out for variation, keep your eyes on all the details, and let's see how the variants, the ingredients of variation, play off in conveying the same or different ideas. Because this medium thrives on variety of meaning. So right here, I'll give you an example of variation. The creature that's guarding the Thema is not a lion, it's a snake. Very typical for ancient Greek hero worship. Snake was an ideal way of symbolizing the restless spirit of a hero. And it starts giving you glimpses of a possible life after death. More on which later. Here you see the charioteer. Isn't that nice? And look, he's wearing an ankle-length robe. Charioteers had this very, very distinguished costume. Here's the Thema. Oh, my goodness. How come Achilles, trust me, he's Achilles, is behind the Thema here, and look at his foot. He's in front of the Thema there. This is typical, again, of ancient Greek painting, is that you're so into the dynamism of the picture that different details of the picture capture different moments. It's like having several frames of a cartoon all fused into one. So one moment he's in front of the Thema, another moment, if you look at it in a different way, he's behind the Thema. Ooh, I like this. Look how here the lion is pictured right on the shield. This is the way warriors used to identify themselves. What kind of picture was on their shield? That was their identity. And guess what the technical word is for the picture on a shield that identifies the concept of the hero? You guessed it, Thema. So this is a Thema too. In the other pictures we saw the lion guarding the Thema in a sense of tomb. You see how the ingredients keep shifting around? Again, you have a snake guarding the Thema. Here, the charioteer's costume, you can see that it has stars. Stars on the costume. Stars were the way that people read their destiny. And therefore, because it's an act of reading, guess what stars are as you look at them and you read them? Semata. This is the shield behind him. Look at the homunculus. In this case, the picture on the shield is what? It's a running leg. Who has the epithet in the Iliad, swift of foot? Achilles. So, am I okay in saying this is Achilles? Who knows? Look at how the homunculus has wings. Did the previous homunculus, the one that we saw in the Minster Hydria, have wings? No. But obviously, he is hovering over the Thema, which again you can't see. A new ingredient. Somebody's being trampled. Another ingredient, a corpse that is being dragged behind a chariot. Whose corpse is that? Hector, as in Scroll 24. But wait a minute, does this make this an athletic event anymore? In athletic events, you don't drag the corpses of your opponents behind you. You see how, again, myth and ritual get fused? And the mythical component where Achilles drags the corpse of Hector, which is an atrocity, which is a morally outrageous thing from the point of view of ancient Greeks, how that is merged with an athletic event. But the bottom line is that Achilles wants to make up for the death of his alter ego, of his nearest and dearest friend, Patroclus. Oh, I didn't show you the grapes. Look at the grapes on the cluster. Grapes. Dionysus. What does Dionysus mean in these pictures? Regeneration after death. Keep that in mind for future discussions. Sorry about that. I'm fascinated with how in this one, your axis of vision has the homunculus with the wings, the snake, and the dead body all in one line, one axis. And look at the hero, he's looking back at that. Eye contact in this art medium is everything, because how people make eye contact with each other or with things helps us focus, helps us concentrate what we're supposed to be pinpointing, what we're supposed to be concentrating on, because we are part of the community, so to speak, of the pictures in the fusion that is the picture. So there seems to be a preoccupation here. In others, we saw a preoccupation with the homunculus. Here, there's a preoccupation with the homunculus, with the snake, and with the dead enemy who is more hated by Achilles than anybody else. In terms of attraction and repulsion, isn't this a strange kind of preoccupation? Right? Because it's one thing to focus on the homunculus. Let's say homunculus is Patroclus. Then he's your nearest and dearest friend. Or your psyche, your life force, that's your nearest and dearest thing, potentially. But here, the focus is not only on, so to speak, the hero's other self, but the opposite of the other self, the deadliest enemy, Hector, whom you're trying to annihilate, whose existence you want to deny. The reason I can be so cavalier and going through quickly is because all of these pictures are on the website. And what I hope you will do after this lecture is revisit all the pictures and think about them some more at your own pace. And you will see all sorts of questions that I'm asking you in the remainder of the lecture notes today, which are also on your website. Ooh, new ingredient. A winged lady. A winged lady who seems to be touching ground, she must have come from above, and as she touches ground, she seems to be facing the trajectory of the motion, which is this round and round and round, the point of concentration, which is the tomb of the hero. She seems to be obstructing the motion, or stopping the motion, or trying to stop the motion. Who is she? I don't know. Now the motion has stopped. It looks like the winged lady succeeded. And we're in luck. There are names attached to all the characters. I'll read them for you. Patroclus. Achilles. So that is Patroclus. This is Achilles. And the corpse, Hector. And in case you're wondering, you see those letters? They're coming out of his mouth, they're his last breath, and they say, Hector. Okay, just to complicate the story, we can't tell the whole story within 1 hour. This is Odysseus, the star of the next epic we're about to read. I can't get into this now. So now, you think we've hit pay dirt. That's the name of the winged lady. The trouble is, the letters say Konisalos. So you know what that is? That's the name of the charioteer. And the charioteer's name is he who shakes up the dust. Or as I think we say in modern car racing terms, eat my dust. So we're still mystified about who the winged lady is. Notice how the thema is now off-center. It's not the point of concentration. It has been moved to the side of the window. It's been moved to the side of the frame. It's as if the point of concentration is now right here. A different emphasis, right? Different things to concentrate on. That's the beauty of variety, and that's the beauty of this medium. And again, we have the snake as the picture on the thema. You could say the thema on the thema. I think this picture gives it away about who the winged lady is. There's one detail about the winged lady here that's a giveaway. Would anybody like to guess? Yes. Yes, you're right. She's carrying a caduceus. So if she's carrying a caduceus, she, like Hermes, must be a messenger of the gods. There are two messengers of the gods in the Homeric medium, and you're good readers. Who are the two? Iris is the female messenger, and that's who this is. But wait a minute, does this correspond to the way we read it in scroll 24 of the Iliad? Isn't the intervention of Iris where Iris tells Priam to go to the camp of the Achaeans to ask for the pity of Achilles? Isn't that an indirect intervention in the sense that Iris never intervenes directly with Achilles? She just makes the suggestion to Priam to go to the tent of Achilles. What I'm arguing is that even the version of the Iliad is yet another variant in this kaleidoscope of different ways of conveying the moral message of what happens at the end of the Achilles story, or better put, the completion of the Achilles story. In other words, how is Achilles going to resolve his undying hatred for the opposite of his ascending scale of affection, his deadliest enemy Hector, who is the opposite, the polar opposite of Patroclus and himself? Obviously, Iris has intervened here in a direct way and said, stop, start the pity. In book 24, scroll 24, the intervention of Iris is indirect. She just suggests to Priam that Priam go to Achilles. Priam starts crying in front of Achilles, and Achilles finally gets pity, is finally rehumanized, and loses his bestial, his murderous, brutal side, and becomes humane and human again. He goes from lion to human again. This is the boss in Hydria. This is the climax of our presentation. Iris is coming down. Look at that gesture. Here is the Thema, again off-center. Here is Patroclus. Here is Hector. Here is Achilles' shield. Look at that fierce look on his face. And what is the symbol on his shield? It's not just one running leg. It's three running legs spinning furiously, as in Roadrunner cartoons, where once the Roadrunner goes really warp speed, you have to have the spin effect. And then the most interesting thing of all, look at this porch or portico. It's hard to make out here, but there are two human figures inside the porch. There's a male figure towards us and a female figure further back. They're both making this gesture, which is again the gesture that the winged lady makes. This is the gesture of lamentation, of sorrow, of grief, or if I may say it in Greek, of achos and pentos. This gesture essentially calls for the emotion of pity, of finally reaching out rather than pulling back. Is Achilles going to have pity? Look at his eyes. He's looking, that's the eye contact. But look at the ricochet effect of the message. She's sending a message of pity. It goes to them. Just as in Iliad 24, Iris suggests to Priam that he appeal to Achilles' sense of pity. And then that message of pity ricochets back to Achilles. So can I do it this way? Like that. But then what about this? Look how Achilles has turned away from his alter ego, the Psyche, or Patroclus, turned away from his Thema. Now why am I saying Psyche or Patroclus? Because in this picture, the homunculus is labeled as Patroclus. So in the Münster Hydria, the homunculus was the Psyche, and you think, well, it's the life force of Achilles. In the Boston Hydria, it's Patroclus himself. Again, I've withdrawn the color picture till the very end. To me, this is the climax of what I'm trying to say. The beautiful thing is you not only see it now in color, you can not only see how the point of concentration of the hero's other self, the hero's Thema, the hero's dead self being pushed aside, and the foreground is now the theme of pity, the theme of grief, evoking pity. And there you can see more clearly the old couple. You can revisit this on the website. And then later on in the school year, we will go to the Boston Museum of Fine Art and see it for ourselves. There's nothing like seeing it at the museum in its reality. One last picture. This is Patroclus, except he's a ram and his throat is slit and people are fighting over his body. And here's a picture of women crying for their dead, Greek women crying for their dead and singing laments now. Look at their hand gesture. You see the continuity of grief from the ancient world to the present. We'll have a wonderful time revisiting these pictures and see you next week. Thank you very much.